right, Brain. You don't like me, and I don't like you. But let's just do this, and I can get back to killing you with beer.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Going over by Station Jacks. I'm Tom Al. We got Greg Pappas on the board today. S&P futures up 10, NASDAQ futures up 8. A bunch of earnings last night. The much anticipated NVIDIA earnings. They weren't growing as fast as people thought. The stock's down a buck and a half. The guy came out and, of course, said their chairman. It's kind of a... Did we just say he's more of like a cheerleader chairman, Greg? Kind of a guy, but... But anyway, the stock was down $5, but it's only down a buck and a half, so that's been up a bunch lately. Snowflake, on the other hand, Class A is up $28. It's $22. I mean, 22%. There you go. Palo Alto's down $6. That's a buck. It's 1.6%. So the big move is in Snowflake to the upside. Yesterday it was Target to the downside. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing okay. It's kind of a cool, dry morning out here in Denver, but I think we're looking right around freezing. I don't miss those mornings when I walked in or rode my bike to the train station and then walked across the river to get to the studio, to Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters. So it's nice to be able to do this from the warmth of my house.
We miss you though. I miss you. It was nice to have
you
here.
I miss my weekly donut, you know, at the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters breakfast buffet.
Well, if you'd hung around, I would cook afterward, you know.
It's hard to cook at six.
we're doing
well, thank you. I hope you guys are good.
Yeah, well, last night was our first cold night. A little bit of rain, windy as all get out. And now this morning, guys are running around with plows, except there's no snow. I mean, I don't know what they're talking about. It's supposed to be 39 today and maybe a little rain, but everybody's got their... I saw a couple salt trucks sitting there. Why they're there, I don't know. I didn't see anything slick at all, but we got to start doing that stuff, I guess.
Well, we had 12 inches of snow, I think, when we talked last week, and then my house up in the mountains had 26 inches.
Wow.
So we've had our area has had a couple of really good snowfalls. It's kind of unusual to see that much snow in November here, but we've had a couple. So I don't think the big snowstorm that's raising problems on the East Coast is gonna do or did anything here. And then we've got two big pulses of water that are out west of us. One coming in on Washington, and the other one hammering Northern California. So I don't know if that's going to make it all the way here or not.
Well, they already got a name for the one in Washington. What is it, like Stormageddon, or what the hell is the name of the thing?
Bomb Cyclone.
Cyclone Bomb or something.
Yeah, we come up
with... I think there's a bomb in there somewhere.
Got to get people tuned into the Weather Channel again. So we'll be naming our winter storm something we never did, and other than calling it, hey, this is a big snowstorm, and but whatever. It is Thanksgiving coming up, and yes. I will note that... Since my time as a cadet at the Air Force Academy, it's almost, I don't think I can remember a Thanksgiving where there hasn't been some horrible weather pattern that basically shut down travel for the cadets going home for Thanksgiving. So that's kind of the gods align against the cadets once again.
Hey, speaking of cadets, I want to do a deep dive into this thing you sent me yesterday. As usual, you got me turned on by the Railroad article.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So just for the listeners, the really interesting thread by one of my Ukrainian sources that I track regularly, talking about what is happening. Now this guy has been, he's been a little positive on the impact of what Ukraine has been doing to the Russian critical infrastructure. So a little optimistic. So I don't know exactly whether how much credence to give what he's saying, but it was a thread describing the absolute collapse of or pending collapse of the Russian rail system, and the Russians are not like us. They don't move traffic over the distances in the in Russia and the former Soviet Union by road. They don't have a well-developed sense of or well-developed setup of roads and interstates. They use their rail lines, and rail is crucial to their operation.
I'm sorry to interrupt. They've got essentially two east and west tracks now. There was one, the Trans-Siberian Railroad. There was another one built, 50
right.
years ago? So there's really two tracks that go all the way across, right?
Right, but even within, not even talking about those intercontinental distances, just within, say, the Moscow region or the western part of the Soviet era of Russia, there's a huge interconnected web of rail lines, and that's how they move most of their stuff.
Did you ever read an investment biker? That wacky guy who went around the world on a motorcycle with his girlfriend. The girlfriend, he was actually teaching in college. She was a lot younger than him, and her parents were too happy about it. But he went around the world on a motorcycle. And when he was going through Russia, they'd get to a town, and he goes, I'm going to this next town. They go, there is no road. So he and the girl had to rent a flat car, put the motorcycles and themselves in a flat car. And there's still cities. The thought of not being able to get from one city in the U.S. to another by road is like, why would you even think of such a thing? But is that still the case over there in some areas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is not... The Russians have a very different view of, travel and intra-country travel and how... Because the country is so big. And, it takes a lot of money, and they didn't... For decades, they didn't devote a lot of money to their own infrastructure. There were only there's only certain ways to get to certain places, and it doesn't surprise me a bit for story to come out.
Just in general, we're talking about this, and I really want to talk about that Navy article you sent me. Good stuff, Lou. By the way, thank you. We have such a egocentric view of the world. And what did Freud say? When you're a baby, it's like at the id, everything is you or something, or whatever stage you go through.
I don't think I've ever gotten out of that stage, Chief.
Maybe none of us have. What was the anal and the oral? I forget what the hell. I haven't seen Freud in so long.
I'm right there.
Yeah, well, I hope it's at least the oral and not the anal.
Yeah.
But the
sometimes it's hard to tell. Sometimes it's hard to tell the difference.
Yes. We're obviously us giving Ukrainians stuff is putting a drain on our things, and
that's true. And we had an admiral. We had an admiral just say this three or four days ago.
Well, we're going to talk about that as soon as we're done with this part of the story. But it's compared to what Russia must be going through. It has to be like kid stuff. I mean, those guys, they have like two tracks that they're moving all this stuff over and over. Their equipment, the maintenance of railroad stuff, it's really good stuff. It's designed to last like forever if you use Timken roller bearings, if you have good rails. And even then, you have to turn the wheels every now and then and replace the roller bearings. And these things are like lifetime lubricated with some sort of maintenance. It's not like the old ones where you had the oilers where the guy had to go put the oil in there every few miles.
Which is apparently what they're getting from China.
Yeah. And matter of fact, who was the first automatic oiler was invented by this African-American gentleman named McCoy, Hence, that was the name, the real McCoy. If you had the real McCoy oiler on your railroad car, the thing would actually put a drop of oil in the thing every like 10 times it spun around or something, so somebody would have to run around and do it by hand. But this stuff, we think this is easy stuff. The maintenance of, how many railroad cars do you think they have over there, for God's sake?
Oh, you know.
I mean, if you start doing the
hundreds
math,
of thousands. Say,
if all of a sudden they all start, because there's a war on, which there is, if all of a sudden you've got, say, roller bearings. Roller bearings are the part on the wheels and axles that do the turning. They spin, and if they don't work, you got problems. Now, that and the wheels make up 90% of a boxcar, right? Or the two trucks, which include the roller bearings, the wheels, and the springs, and that stuff. And the brakes, by the way. So the if you start talking about having to replace that every 5-6 years, and you've got 300,000 cars or something, and all of a sudden you start kicking your movement up a bit till you have to replace these every 3 years. Ooh, the number, the stress you put on your system just in railroad cars, not to mention going to find them, and if stuff goes out, how the hell do you haul 1,000 miles of bad roller bearings so you can get it fixed? The logistics of this is you know, mind-boggling. And
more importantly, and this is what this thread noted, this guy was tracking reports of derailments. More importantly, when you have a limited number of rail connections and you start derailing regularly on them, that blocks your ability to get replacement parts, among other things, for the other equipment that's breaking down. And they don't have, because they've been feeding, you know, their men exclusively into this meat grinder. You know, they've been taking casualties. I think our estimates now, even the conservative estimates in our own DOD, is that the Russians have, you know, have had more than 500,000 casualties. That's killed and wounded. And you know, you can't, so all the guys that were out there repairing those 300,000 rail cars, all the guys that were out there driving those trains, all the guys that were managing, you know, the operation of those railroads, they're gone. You know, they don't have an unlimited supply of manpower. It's huge compared to Ukraine, but those people are gone. And so again, the old line that we talked about from day one, when we found out that they had not maintained their equipment when they launched it into Ukraine, you win wars with logistics.
Yep.
And this is another marker on their logistics. And you know, this thread talks about the number of derailments. He talks about the breakdown in systems that are occurring, the lack of manpower, the failure to repair. And then, you know, he says, well, this should probably come to a head sometime next year based on the economic numbers that you're seeing there.
Well, I'm going to but there was a derailment. When most people think of a derailment, okay, there are people in this world, boy, we'd be good business over there. They're called re-railers. They're actually our guys. If it's a derailment, they have the equipment to head out there and either put the cars back upright or do something with them and get them back on the track and bring extra trucks and so forth. I say trucks, I mean the things that are underneath the car. But when I was at Pullman, there was a derailment of one of the Amtrak cars down in Louisiana on the way to New Orleans. And, I mean, most people would think, okay, if you have a derailment, you get your cranes and your trucks and you drive down the access road, which pretty much every rail line has, we know, and you fix the damn thing. Well, these guys at Pullman were heading out, and I go, how are you going to get there? And the guy goes, what are you talking about? It's in the middle of the swamp. There is no road. We got to clear every train between us and the derailment out of the way, and we got to get in there and re-rail the thing from the tracks. There's no room for trucks. It's in the swamp. I'm like, oops. That has to be the way theirs is the whole way. It's, I mean, just think of that.
Yeah, there was a derailment near my former in-laws' hometown in southwestern Iowa, and the train lines there run through farmland. Obviously, I mean, that's pretty much the entirety of Iowa, except for an occasional building. And this thing derailed into a field, you know, cornfield, and there was no access road. They had to bring a bulldozer out and hook some kind of chain or you know, straps or whatever they do to the bulldozer to pull the car out out of the field, really drag the thing out of the field, and had to do that two or three times. Mercifully, the engine didn't go off the tracks. It was just the cars, the passenger cars. Yeah, so there were just some passengers shaken up. I can't imagine. And you know, Tom, being the rich Americans where everything seems to work, we take all this for granted.
Right.
We don't have the slightest idea. I didn't until I read this article. We don't have the slightest idea of what it takes to keep a railroad running.
Well, my brother is a real good thing, because when he was at GATX, it's interesting. Dan, in addition to being president of PTI and all around terrific guy and great brother, I wouldn't say that if he was in earshot. He went to work for GATX, and those guys had they had him pinned, because he was a CPA and his MBA, they had him pinned for like serious management, spot. I don't know, talk about president or anything, but they had a deal for those guys. They did every part of the business. So he went to some sales calls. In fact, he was involved in the when Coors decided to have a bottling plant in Virginia. I think it's Virginia. They didn't want to make the beer there. They just wanted to bottle it there, which means you had to get the bulk beer from the plant in Colorado to Virginia.
Yep.
So they ended up designing tank cars with so much insulation, it didn't matter if it was 100 degrees or 10 below zero. The thing could leave Colorado, and 3 days later, it would only move one or two degrees from the 34 they wanted it. It wouldn't freeze, and it wouldn't get hotter. But so he... Remember the game in the old Mile High Stadium where the dude threw the snowball at the guy in the field goal and it freaked him out and he missed the field goal?
Yep.
That came from, he was in the box next to the guy who threw it. on the he goes, the guy didn't warm up at all. He goes, it was one hell of a toss. The guy had an unbelievable arm. He winged it.
Right, like, that's right. That reminds me of that horrible Viking game at Met Stadium where the guy hit the ref with a bottle. With a throw, he threw the bottle about 70 yards.
Wow.
A whiskey bottle out of the stands and hit the official in the head.
Oh, God.
Now, this was right after the refs had missed an offensive pass interference call on Drew Pearson that lost the Vikings the game. It was a playoff game. And it was a disaster. 1975 was horrible. But my father, you know, ever the realist, you know, the coaches were furious. They watched the whole thing. They said it was clear pass, offensive pass interference. Da da da, and you know they're screaming at the officials. And he watched this bottle sail out of the stands. And I said, what did you think? And my father said, I thought that was the greatest throw I've ever seen in my life.
but one of his things was on what do you do with cars and even locomotives that are out that are you know, first of all finding them. That maybe have derailed, and sometimes you could just put wood on the side of the track, and if you're, like you said, if the locomotive still works, you can pull the car back up on the tracks. If the guys know how to do that, they put a bunch of wood down, they essentially roll the car back up until it plunks back on the track. I mean, when you do that, you're supposed to have the wheels turned, because if you have a bad wheel, you can clunk up your whole track. Now, I bet that's not happening in Russia. That's why the tracks are deteriorating.
Well,
they got dead spots on the flat spots on the wheels.
Yeah, and so you also have to remember that in Russia, they don't have the infrastructure to unload these things. So everything is done, even shipping their ammunition and their military stuff, it's all done by hand. So when they come off, they have you know some loading stuff that will help take it off the train. But then once it gets off the train, it's hand loaded into trucks for movement to the battlefront. And this is true throughout Russia. They offload this stuff, and by the way, that's not just true for the trains. I think I remember I told you when I was doing work in Russia, you know, regularly, I attended a conference in Moscow with some Western officials who were talking about dropping shipping containers off in St. Petersburg, and having them basically completely taken apart by a bunch of guys waiting with cars in the parking lot of the container facility. So in this case it was Snickers candy bars, and I know I've told you this story, but the Mars people were talking about selling the stuff, and they said, you know, somebody asked them, well, you know, how do you do it? Because, you know, there's Snickers everywhere. And he said, well, we don't know. We don't have an internal distribution network. And the room got real quiet, and people were going, you know, you see people's heads turning, going, what? What's he saying? And he said, all we know is this. Our shipping containers arrive in St. Petersburg at the port. Our guy cuts the, you know, cuts the lock on the container and opens it up, and hundreds of men are standing there. And as the container opens up, they walk in, you know, the payment's already been made for the product to whoever the Russian distributor is. These guys walk in and they pick up cartons of Snickers and they throw them in the trunks of their cars and they drive away. And he said, we don't know what happens to them after that. He said, however, we do know that it is anywhere in the former Soviet Union, you can walk into some grocery store and you can buy a Snickers bar. They're everywhere.
And somehow that was they get there.
Well, that's right. They had no idea. I mean, I did. I was waiting at a bus stop in Moscow near my hotel to go into the city, and I watched this car pull up, and these guys jump out and they open the trunk, and there's one of these Snickers boxes, and they start selling just to people at the bus stop, you know, 50 rubles for a Snickers bar, and we all reach in our pockets, grab the stuff, hand it out. The guy just gives us the Snickers and jumps in the car and drives away, go on to the next bus stop.
That's unreal.
Anyway, the Russian rail system is a disaster.
Well, just give me a real quick, just so we can put it on for the listeners and mentally how this sort of happens and how things. The article that Lou sent me, it has, you know, the first issue you start to get this, the second issue you start to get this, the third issue, and finally the place collapses. Well, I went out, talk about something crazy, Blue. I went out to Colorado. Actually, I went to was it Driggs, Utah? Someplace, I don't know, somewhere in Utah, where it's the dinosaur capital of the world. What's the name of that place?
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I buy this old Dodge Ram Charger. Remember those things? And I'm driving it back. I stopped in Steamboat and I skied a couple days. I'm driving back and I, you know, was tired driving. So I'm somewhere in Nebraska, right? I-80 is right next to the original railroad line, Transcontinental line. And it's astounding that the I-80 was essentially mapped out by satellite. And it's within, what, a mile or two of the railroad, which was mapped out by people on horseback.
Yeah, well, it runs along the Platte River.
Yeah, but the surveying they did for the railroad line was almost as good as if they had a satellite. So anyway, I pull into this place. I'm trying to get some dinner. Of course, it's too late. The lady likes me, so she makes me a ham sandwich. It was a good ham sandwich. So I'm sitting there, and this guy drinking next to me. Lou, I don't normally look at dudes. The guy's got forearms like Popeye. I'm like, what the hell does this guy do for a living? He's playing one of those video games. Finally, I start BSing with the guy. He's a track guy for the Union Pacific. And he's been promoted to where he's in charge of like 50 miles of track, making sure that, you know, that main line, which is still the main line, I mean, there's a few others, but is when you're driving next to it, there was, you could see a freight train like every... I says, you know, there's a lot of trains on this thing. He goes, every 25 minutes, there's a freight. You know, some of them are unit trains with the coal or whatever. He goes, they're all going 55 miles an hour, not one faster, one lower, because you're gaining or losing. Everybody's got to go the same speed. He goes, we had a derailment about 6 months ago, and it took us 2 days to get the thing back together. Then he says, I'm going to ask you a question. He says to me, he goes, I get it back on the rails. What do I do with it? It's on the rails, and yet going east and going west, there's hundreds of trains backed up. Where the hell do I take this thing to a siding to where I can get it off the line? I had to move everybody back, all these other guys off, to find a siding big enough for this train. We finally got back on. The logistics of this, can you imagine in Russia if you've got like 10 derailments and you've got 1,000 miles of track and how many sidings? I mean, the rest of their system has to be falling apart. I mean, what is their food system to get food to these guys in Ukraine? What is their... You know,
well, this is why the article starts with the inflation, and the price issues that are hitting the Russian economy all at the same time. So the short answer is that we immediately imposed embargo on Russia, which had gotten, and this, people were talking about this early on, that our embargo would damage their rail system because they use almost exclusively Western bearings, as you noted, that are self-lubricating. And they couldn't. It was just people were sort of saying, all right, how long are they going to be able to make these things go? Because their logistics are terrible and their repair operations are not as good. And they're going to burn through these things faster than we normally would, and they're not going to be able to get replacements. So you know, that is one aspect of it. The manpower aspect and being able to repair and operate the lines is another element that's breaking down. The derailments are affecting their ability to get repair rolling, just the basic rolling stock, so that they've got enough cars to move things. And yet they continue to stumble on, and this may be one of the reasons why this decision, I don't know what the Biden people are doing, but this sudden decision in the interregnum between Biden's the election and Biden's departure have decided that they were going to authorize those long range missile strikes into Ukraine. Because that suddenly, or into a Russia from Ukraine, that suddenly changes the game a little bit for the Russians in terms of their ability to move stuff in. And if these, attackums and storm shadows and scalps can begin hitting railroad nodes hard, and they are, suddenly for the Russians, your logistics issue gets a lot more difficult.
Lou, tell me,
even that more than it was.
Lou, tell me, in this day of immense partisan bickering, politics, and people just hating people in general, it seems these days. Tell me, when they met at the White House last week, that on something this important, those two guys didn't both agree on this. And no matter if they hate each other, that has to be an item of discussion. You can't. Biden can't do that on his own right now with Trump coming in 8 weeks. I'm saying Trump has to have said okay with it. I mean, my total faith in everything we do here is like lost if they didn't at least bring that topic up. I mean, when Obama went in after the Bush administration was elected, that's when a lot of the real bad stuff in 2008 happened. 2007, 2008 it was right after. Was during the changeover, right? Is when the market all collapsed.
Yeah,
but then those guys worked together.
First of all, we don't know who is running the country. Okay, we don't know. I don't know what the president's mental condition is. If he's capable of having an extended conversation,
is Trump? That'll be quite. Jesus.
Trump is
more capable. I agree.
Trump, like I said, if you'd watch Joe Rogan, you wouldn't have any questions about Trump's
You know what? You and Kevin are sober as Rogan interview. I've listened to the guy for 50 years. The fact that he sounded okay for an hour and a half of softball questions.
Three hours and they weren't softball questions.
Okay, well, I'm saying that doesn't make me change my whole opinion of the guy.
I'm just saying. I know that Trump can hold a conversation.
I just said I'm sure he's way more capable than Biden. Way more capable.
For more than that, I'm not sure who's doing it. I would think that this got mentioned, and Trump may have said, yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of a big decision, Lou. I mean, it's a big.
It is, and it's stunning. It's stunning that it would happen this way, if I were the Biden people, rather than making their guy look like an idiot, further look like an idiot, I would have if they'd agreed on it, I would have arranged with the Trump people to say, look, we're going to announce this as a joint deal, rather than just doing it. So, I'm not convinced it was coordinated.
Well, but I haven't heard the other side saying don't do it.
The other side's not going to say anything because they're not telegraphing it. At least at this stage, they're not telegraphing to the other side. Hey, this is a problem. And they don't want to. If they're not going to say don't do it because that immediately gives Putin an edge when Trump takes office.
Well, let's talk about that for a quick second. We'll go to break in a minute, but I want to maybe we'll chew on this over break. I know you have said that the Russians think differently than we do, and I absolutely believe you because you know those people. I don't. But at some point, and I'm going to try and rear my head up here a little bit, when the place is falling apart, and his buddies still have their, you know, their high-end yachts sitting at port somewhere decaying, and they used to be pretty fat and happy, and now they're not, and the things decay anymore. Somewhere, someplace, somebody's going to say, what do we give a crap about this Ukraine for in the first place? Now we can't even buy corn from because we screwed that all up, or wheat. I mean, what? I don't think the guy could do this forever. I mean, they got out of Afghanistan after a while, too. I mean, how much degradation before the people around him say, what are we doing? There has to be some limit.
That's a good question, and he has consolidated power with a number of his with one of his buddies who is gradually taking over the sort of and this is, you know, again, we go back to our definition of fascism, the sort of fascist economic structure that they've established there, which is, you know, these gigantic Russian corporations like Rosneft and Rosatom that are ostensibly private businesses but actually are hand in glove with the state in terms of how they do business. These are all coming under control of one guy, his favorite guy who he trusts, and the number of analysts see this as a way of trying to insulate himself and his power structure from, you know, the will of the people or the concerns of the people with respect to things like pricing, like access to consumer goods and things like that.
Still, there's got to be. I mean, we're feeling pressure here. I mean, what it has to be. What's it like over there? I mean, here, you know, we're
well, the standard of living. You know, the average Russian citizen accepts a quality of life that we would find ridiculous and impossible. And by the way, that's what they're proud of, that as a part of their national character, to the extent they have one, is, you know, our ability to endure suffering and discomfort and just general misery. Nobody beats us at being able to do that, and still, you know, and still present a challenge to the West.
Well, what do you say we go to a quick break and talk about this a Navy thing you sent, because I find that fascinating. Boy, the two of them kind of dovetail together, don't they?
That was one of the most frightening paragraphs I've read in a while.
Yeah, S&P futures up 15, NASDAQ futures up 30. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
We're in deep. Yes, we are in very, very deep.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Greg Pappas on the board. Interesting morning. S&P futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 25. Dow futures up 171. Individual stocks in the Dow. We've got, I don't see what's up so much here. We've got McDonald's actually down 591. Salesforce up 3. All the hospital stocks were way up yesterday. I'm not sure why that is. Well, Salesforce is not a hospital stock, but UNH was up a bunch yesterday. It's always Travelers, which is an insurance stock. But today we got NVIDIA down 1.5 after earnings, which is really, their straddle was like 8 or 10, so it's low. However, Snowflake is up 28, but Palo Alto's down 9. So we've got kind of mixed bag in some of the earnings stuff. Still, the stunner yesterday was Target. It hasn't come, well, it's up 5 cents today, though. It's not even a dead cat bounce. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 80.4%, FTSE up to 2036.5%, CAC around down 4, let's call that flat, so mostly up over there. Asia Nikkei down 326, that's 0.9%. Hang Seng down 103.5%, 19,601. Shanghai up 2, let's call that one flat. Yesterday, we had a little bit of a mixed bag. Dow was up 139, I said most of that was United Healthcare. S&P was up 13 cents, let's call that one flat. NASDAQ down 21. So that was almost flat too. So we were just kind of waiting around for the NVIDIA earnings. You know, they came out beating everything, but then the guidance going forward wasn't what people want. Bonds, 10-year, I'll say that's unchanged, 4.40. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.31. Japan down up 2 basis points, 1.09, almost 1.1. Wow, for those guys, that's high. Oil, this is a big move today, up $1.57, 70.32, so over 70. Oil up on Russia-Ukraine missile exchange, outweighing U.S. crude stock rises. Okay, so our crude stock's going up, but still, the oil price well went up. Brent up $1.55, 74.36. Natural gas up 21 cents, 3.40. RBOB up 4 cents, 2.09. Gold up 17.80, 26.69. Not really threatening to go back to 27.50, but moving that way. Silver up 13 cents, 31.14. Copper down 2 cents, 4.13. The foreign exchange, this has been the big mover. The euro still down in the low 105s, 105.2. British pound, 126.3. So both not moving much today. And we have Bitcoin up another 36,97,999. Somehow, the Trump group is pushing this Bitcoin to the moon. I don't know what the hell they're doing there. And if they must be long Bitcoin. I mean, I don't trust any of these people. Anyway, we got Force Traffic, Weather, Sports.
Good morning, everyone. It is 6:39 or 6:40 here in Chicago. Feels like 22. Winter weather advisory, 7 to 1 p.m. Slippery conditions, possible snow changing to rain later. Phoenix, 49 now, high of 80 today, mostly sunny. Opposite of Chicago, cool later tonight, but looks nice there. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 21 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 39 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 24 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And Stevenson to the Ryan is 23 minutes. Sports, Bulls lose at Bucks. That was 106 to 122. Knicks win at Suns, 138 to 122. And tonight we have the Steelers at the Browns, 7:15. That's all I got,
Steelers,
Chief.
The Steelers have been putting together quite a good year.
That's mostly coaching.
Yeah. Well,
back to you guys.
It's an organization. You don't change coaches every year. You kind of have a... You have somewhat of a track record of everybody. Everybody does their job. Owner does his, general manager does his, the coach does his. You don't just keep blaming each other. It's just the way. Anyway, Lou, the naval stuff. When you get into the logistics stuff, you know, I kind of love it because that's sort of where I grew up. Why don't you tell what the story is here? This is a admiral, and it's basically talking about what kind of footing we're on versus what we ought to be, and how we're behind in this and that, and how we really need to change how, not just what we're procuring, but the speed at what we're procuring it and so forth. Why don't you summarize it?
Well, it's an article. This particular author that I follow and that I forwarded to Tom has been banging the drum for issues in the Western Pacific and our actual combat capability there for some time. And you know, what he says is we have effectively ignored him. Obama said we're going to pivot to China. You know, Russia's in one of his many feckless foreign policy announcements. He said, yeah, Russia's done. We're going to pivot to China because China's the real threat. Well, China is the real threat, but you know, Russia obviously is not done. Our capability in the Western Pacific is severely limited vis-a-vis China. And the Chinese have been building up a legitimate blue water navy with hundreds, if not thousands, of long-range strike tubes or launchers that can threaten, if not destroy, our carrier operations, our submarines, and other ways we project power into that area. And all of this, of course, revolves around two things for China. You know, China wants this to become, you know, the 21st century. China wants it to be a China century. And so this starts with the effective neutering of Taiwan, if not the outright taking it over by military means, followed by aggressive and complete expansion up to, you know, Hawaii, let's say. And that sounds crazy, but it's absolutely correct. They wanted their influence over that part of the world, and it's their part of the world from their perspective, and so they want total control over it. They want control over everything to the dateline, and they want control over everything to basically Africa and maybe all the way to the Suez Canal.
This is like the Japan playbook.
Yeah, they want control over that. They need access to Africa for minerals. They want those shipping routes intact because they're not an oil rich country. They're not self sufficient on power in power generation, and so they've built a navy that is capable of challenging ours. They've got a lot more ships. They have a lot more long range launchers. They know with respect to Taiwan that our systems will be in range of their land based systems, which, you know, they'll outnumber us, you know, 50-1. So, you know, what are we doing in response? Well, in response, we're doing nothing. We're barely moving the needle in terms of our offensive capability. And while we have some fantastic technological stuff, we don't have very much of it. And the article talks about magazines, which is the new word for, you know, supplies, and specifically supplies of missiles. And this admiral was saying, look, it's great that we're out there using, you know, $500,000 air-to-air missiles and surface-to-air missiles, or in some cases, $1.2 million surface-to-air missiles to shoot down $20,000 drones, or to shoot down, you know, $50,000 cruise missiles. But we're making, I think the procurement number is something like 25 or 30 a year of those missiles. We fired off, you know, 2 years worth of procurement against a third rate, you know, punk ass, for lack of a better term, country in Yemen, in the Houthis. And we're expending these weapons at a much greater rate than we can replace them. Whereas, you know, the Chinese are going to be able to fire thousands of those of missiles at us and drones at us. And we're not going to have the stockpile. I mean, we will deplete our stockpile of those weapons in something like a week if we have to fight it against a Chinese operation. And we won't have any more. They will have lots more. And we will not be able to.
It'll force us to accelerate the thing.
It'll force us to go back to, you know, World War, Vietnam era weapons, and then we'll run through those.
Well, it may force us. I had an article on the Quora, and somebody wrote in and said, "What's the most dangerous, or the most what that term was, the most complete?" Most dangerous ship we've ever made. And of course, everybody expects to say, you know, a Nimitz-class carrier or a Ford-class carrier, and the guy goes, no. It's an Ohio-class ballistic submarine. They used to be able to deploy, how many missiles, and they're like 10 different directions on the top. Anyway, one of those things could have 460 nuclear warheads all going in different directions.
Yep.
Now that, he says, there isn't a carrier force on Earth that carries that much, that has that kind of balls, basically.
No, and if you're willing to go nuclear,
that's the thing. Would that force us to do something that we don't want to do?
I don't know. I mean, the issue about you know, nuclear is they hold, because they've got intercontinental ballistic missiles, and we have virtually no defense against them. They don't either. The question is, is San Francisco, Los Angeles, you know, Denver, New York, Miami, are these cities worth the defense of Taiwan? And that's the risk. So this is the brinksmanship, and we're playing a similar game in Ukraine. You know, are we willing to push the Russians all the way to the edge and maybe a little bit past where they think they're going to have to go nuclear? Yeah, they fired an intermediate range ballistic missile into Ukraine. First time they've used one of those into Ukraine this morning. As we think, some sources are saying as a straightforward warning to us, you know, you better be careful with the stuff that you're authorizing the Ukrainians to do, because we will escalate. And so we're sort of
they also think. I want to get more about this logistics stuff, but they also think that they can make the rules that you can fire all you want at us, provided it lands on your soil. Well, that's an interesting rule when you're invading somebody.
Oh no, I mean. Yeah. So the Russians claim to be threatened by the presence of a potential NATO ally on its borders. You know, I'm sorry, that's BS. Finland is on their borders. Finland's a NATO nation.
So is Latvia.
And,
so is Lithuania.
And Finland just joined. Did the Russians get upset about that? No.
Well, this is just one goofball talking. Whatever, if there's ever going to be a peace, truce, you name it there, it's going to have to come, I think, over the top of the Ukrainians, and that's a horrible way. I mean,
absolutely.
Somebody, maybe Trump's the guy, you know, call Putin and say, okay, you get your warm water port, you get the Russian-speaking areas in the Crimea, get your guys out of the rest of the place, and we'll call this off. Something like that has to happen. And the Ukrainians, they may say, well, we want all the property back. I'd say, well, you're gonna have to do it on your own, because we're not gonna
countenance the slaughter anymore.
No. I'm saying there are legitimate Russian speaking areas there that or maybe you have a vote, I don't know. Boy, votes sound so weird. But hey, let's talk more about this stuff. Let's assume this dude's right. We have a Lou, I drive by a bridge every night. First, the assholes, took all summer to replace the sidewalks on both sides. Now the whole bridge is closed. We can't do anything, it doesn't appear, in any kind of a timely manner anymore. I'm sure we are in some places. It looks like they're putting I-40 back together pretty darn good, showing Americans what they can do when they want to. But if all of a sudden you and I showed up at somewhere in Washington, and with this admiral, I wouldn't talk. Well, hard for me not to talk, but for you guys, and all of a sudden everybody.
By the way, this is right out of Pete Hegseth, the SecDef nominee. This is right out of his playbook. He talks about this necessity.
But anybody who listens to the show and just listens to what you and Mike and the rest of the people say, realize we've got to kick this into gear. But okay, what are the logistics and the timing? I mean, suppose everybody agrees. This guy Lou, he's on his show, and this guy Chief makes a good. All of a sudden, Mike Murphy comes on. He talks about how the stuff when he was in there, because he was more in the logistics part than you were. He says, "This is also. What is the timing? I mean, if we say you're right, we got to do this. First of all, how long before the meetings are called, the inauguration, the meetings, get together? I mean, we're talking about we can't build a bridge in 10 years. I mean, what is it going to take? Is it April before we get enough people on the page? Is it July before we have the congressional committee gets it on their books? What is the best we can do for the missiles to go from two a month to four? The logistics get lost.
Some of it will be energized right away. Some of it will be energized right away. But you know, we had this conversation 2 years ago.
Okay, so walk that through for me. How does all of a sudden the meetings in Congress get pulled up till tomorrow instead of 6 months from now? How does the bill go through without some crap in there? And how does the place now start ordering more stuff, half of which comes from Taiwan, which is a problem? And how does it actually happen?
Well, there'll be some discretionary money, I assume, that will be released immediately. They will divert it. You know, for example, one of the things that's going to happen is they're going to fire every DEI officer. You know, they're going to release hundreds of, you know, a couple of, you know, millions of dollars in compensation that is going to DEI officials throughout the government. Those people will be removed. That money frees up. There is some discretionary capability within the Department of Defense where they can move money from one pot to another, and they will do whatever they can in that regard. To try to bolster spending. I suspect the next move will be to arrange for long-term contract commitments, because this is one of the reasons why we are inefficient at our production. Long-term contract commitments for certain types of weapon systems that will help, you know, we need to establish some kind of parity or deterrence back in the Western Pacific. Things like missile stocks. You know, again, you heard the admiral in that article talk about his magazines. His magazine depth wasn't good. It wasn't satisfactory in 2022. And it's gotten much worse because a lot of the stuff that we had has been diverted to Ukraine and the Middle East.
A lot of it in the article, I'm kind of reading between the lines here as I'm looking at it. If I'm in the room and have any kind of authority whatsoever, we're not buying more million-dollar missiles to shoot at drones. We're going to find a better way to shoot a drone down. I mean, there's a quality issue here and a quantity issue.
And I'm sure Greg is familiar with this guy, Palmer Luckey, the Anduril defense contractor, that has been revolutionizing manufacturing capability using things like 3D printing and you know cheap alternatives to mass produce systems that can deal with these kinds of weapons and you know also create an offensive nightmare for an attacking force. Disposable, lightweight, multi-interlocked electronic warfare systems, for example, that you drop or fly 1,000 of these things into an area, and you might be able to destroy some of them, but together they network and they create real problems for an attacking force using drones or anything else.
A prop airplane with machine gun shooting these things down coming out of the Houthi coast.
Well, or better yet, a drone that has some similar capability that's autonomous. That's one thing. The high-tech stuff, which is what we need to defend our carriers against the Chinese ballistic missile. They've got ballistic missiles that they can fire out of the mainland that, when lobbed into an area, can, as they're coming down at Mach 5, they are getting targeting data and can find an aircraft carrier. We don't have a lot of capability against something like that. We have some, but not a lot. We need to up our game in that regard. We need to rethink our defense strategy because our big base in the far east is Okinawa. It's Kadena.
I've been on. Well, ever since you've been on this show, I'm saying I don't want 10 incredibly massive carriers. I want 20 or 25 that aren't quite as big because nobody's got them anywhere as big as ours now.
Right. So we've got island bases that are these giant hubs. Okinawa is one, and Guam is another, and those places are going to become uninhabitable. The Chinese can target those right now, and they can put 1,000 missiles.
But they have the same. The story we talked about in the first half of the show, they have the same supply issues as it's hard for me to believe that the North Koreans and the Chinese can outproduce people on something. They can't turn the lights on at night, for God's sake.
I don't know about the North Korea. I don't know, but certainly the Chinese can, and they've been stockpiling stuff for more than a decade. They've been taking a long view here. And they can put 1,000 missiles on each one of those, 1,000 one-ton weapons on those islands easily right now.
And these are basically the fake islands, the islands they're making, right?
Right. And the islands they're making are essentially a way for them to make geographic claims about coastal waters. But I'm talking about attacks. They launch these attacks from the mainland. They'll fire those long-range missiles from the mainland. And basically turn those islands, make those islands uninhabitable. So we've got to disperse. And I talked about this a couple of years ago. The concept of this term dispersed lethality, where the Navy is basically working to make every ship, even some of its supply ships, missile launchers.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
So that you can strap on, and the Air Force is doing the same thing. We have a capability now. And we don't have a lot of them, and this is the thing. The next technological toy is really attractive, and superiority is just around the corner. And one of the things this admiral is saying is, look, we got to buy what we've got. We got to get a lot more of it. All the new whiz bang stuff is wonderful, but we can't produce it fast enough. We have to produce this other stuff. that we know works and that'll fit to our stuff, our carriers and our destroyers and cruisers right now. The Air Force's designed a capability with a cargo, any cargo aircraft can drop 3 or 4 pallets of missiles, that are cruise missiles, that arm themselves, come out the back of the aircraft, they pull out of the carrier, and then they start flying on their own in midair. So now you can turn a cargo aircraft into a missile launch platform for 30 or 40 cruise missiles. You know, again, complicating the targeting.
Didn't we do that in World War II where things looked like cargo ships and all of a sudden the things went down, they had guns, and they went after the submarines?
Well, those were the merchant raiders that the Germans used. Yeah. So the idea is that you know, even a minesweeper, by the way, we have like zero minesweepers. We have no minesweeping capability. If the Chinese want to mine,
you know, we used to make those? Way back in the day, when we used to go to on vacation up to Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. And there was a shipbuilding plant, was it Peterson's? They made minesweepers. You know, and they had one gone, and there's one. They had a couple of them there, and they were making them. You know what's weird about the minesweepers, Lou? They're all wood.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, the minesweeping philosophy now is that's something you can do with a drone. You don't need a giant fully manned ship to do it. You can launch, you know, 50 drones that go underwater and can, or across the surface of the water, and can find these things. But this is all basic, you know, blocking and tackling stuff that we're not doing. Well, I need to spin up on it.
I'm totally with you. I just how you get that ball running. I mean, it took, everybody says, and it's, you know, you've read more than this one book, but if you read the book William Kennedy, Freedom from Fear, everybody says that we started doing all this stuff the day after December 7th. That's total BS. I mean, Roosevelt had already put what's his name in charge. Marshall in charge 2 and 3 years before. He already had weeded out the older people, the peacetime generals. We already were selling stuff to Britain and France, so we already had our plants going. We were 40% of the way there. Is that the right number, you think, or is it a little less or a little more? Of we're already making tanks at the Pullman plant, I think, for Britain. We're already doing a lot of that stuff.
Well, that was the whole point of Lend-Lease. Part of the point of Lend-Lease was to put the stress on our and create a market for us to produce the stuff that we needed ultimately.
Right.
Yeah.
We already had. I mean, the Enterprise was set down in what, the year before the war, right? It was a 1940 ship.
I think that's right. Yeah.
So I mean, we already had a few things out there. We didn't have enough, but it wasn't. On December 8th, Roosevelt said, "Hey, we better start making some bullets." That's not what happened, right? Have you skied yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't had time to turn around. So remember, I'm officially, part time employed. That's becoming bigger and bigger in eating up more and more of my free time.
Nobody can be part time employed. Nobody can. Nobody can be a donate your time to a charity organization. Once you get in there, you get in there, right?
Once you get in, you're in. Yeah, that's the way it works.
Anyway, be good. Next week, we won't see you. I'm trying to get you on maybe half hour earlier, so we don't want to miss our Lou fix. We'll arrange something.
Okay, let's see. Give me a heads up. I'm headed to the mountains for Thanksgiving, but we can talk from there.
Hey, are they still trying to buy the city or the town so they can mine underneath it?
No, I think that. Well, short answer is if the city suddenly became for sale, I think they'd sell it, or I think they'd buy it. But right now, no. Gold is, gold's going through the roof, and that mine is just, they're going crazy.
Well, good for them. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 13. We got a real quick break, and we'll have Mr. Dan Janitas.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime.
Blowing up back Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. SP futures up 12. NASDAQ futures are up 17. Hey, Greg, for next week, let's, that's what Kevin does. Hey, Dan, how are you? So Kevin does a lot of stuff about the supply chain stuff.
Good, good. How are you?
Doing good. Kevin does a lot of stuff teaching at his place on supply chain stuff and all those kinds of things. And I'd like to, next week, let's not forget on Wednesday or Friday, maybe we can have Luan with him, talk about how exactly when you have, you know, pieces of equipment like missiles and stuff with, what do you figure, Dan, 5,000 parts in them, how the hell you actually do get on some sort of a footing where you not only you double or triple your manufacturing capability, but you got to bring all these supplies with you, and some of them are maybe from overseas, some of them maybe they're not. The logistics of that are They're mind-boggling. Everybody just assumes when you show up to buy your car, it's a car, right? You have no idea how many parts are in there, or how many places GM or Ford has to source all that stuff from, and how what it all takes to get that car to get together and run, and not have seats missing and stuff. I can't imagine for military equipment, Dan. It's how many of the firms? That's a good question. A lot of the firms that you deal with, a lot of the middle size, and you deal with big firms too, but I'm saying in your sphere, are any of those people, have you ever come across military suppliers?
I have over the years. We have invested in military suppliers. We've invested in a lot of manufacturing companies and companies that manufacture parts to the defense industry. The conference I had last week was very interesting. We talked to a lot of the CEOs of the companies, mostly small and mid-cap companies, but companies that are, I tend to talk to a lot of the basic materials and companies that have manufacturing facilities. And the word that I'm getting pretty much across the board is that these companies have been buying or expanding their plants here in the U.S. They've done this in anticipation of knowing that more work is going to be focused here in the U.S., more manufacturing work is going to be focused here. There's been a shift away from, clearly away from retail, and a lot of retail space is actually being repurposed for manufacturing facilities. So there's those companies that already have facilities have been expanding them. So I do think that process is in place, and for those companies that have been doing that, the ones I spoke to are clearly happy that, with the new administration, things are going to work in their favor. Some of the other issues that they have to deal with, though, all the parts, as you're probably suggesting, cannot be manufactured here, and some of them we still are relying on foreign countries. So there'll still be some bottlenecks, I think, with getting tariffs and the whole issue of labor as well. If we are looking here in the United States, one thing that has been pretty true of most of the companies we spoke to last week is that there are challenges finding people to do the work, and that is sort of been across the board. That may change, and that is likely to change as we start seeing some of the policies implemented that'll take away some of the benefits that some people who could have been working have been receiving. So the one theme that I find really interesting is the theme of where probably, you know, Trump received a lot of his votes from those people who are workers who are, say, working two jobs now, who have wanted to, you know, just work one job, but because of the expenses, you know, their daily expenses being food, shelter, you know, anything related to housing, anything related to services, with those expenses going up, they've been forced to work a second job. And I've talked to a few of these people over the past few weeks who are in jobs that are support jobs that have all pretty much said the same thing. First of all, they're very frustrated that others have been receiving entitlements who are perfectly healthy and can work, and that programs are not necessarily set up that are taking people who are, let's say, legal migrants and providing those opportunities. There hasn't been enough focus on that. So hoping that, you know, trying to stay positive here, that this focus changes, and that, you know, kind of long-winded way of answering your question, that we will continue to expand and continue to grow here, because that has been the trend and should continue to be the trend, but that we're not going to be having roadblocks, for example, finding the help to do it or finding the help at the right cost. So, and also making sure that those raw materials that go into manufacturing are still not going to have coming with high dollar prices.
Well, the carefully worded and very successful campaign issue that the reason why you're not getting, like, your life is not better as all these other people are getting all these benefits is the biggest load of BS I've ever seen in my life. That absolutely is not the truth. Yet everybody believes
right.
it. Everybody believes it. That, you know, if you're black, you're Hispanic, if you're living in a homeless tent, if only these immigrants weren't getting all this stuff, you'd have all this money. I can't believe they were sold that bill of goods. I cannot believe it. But they were. That it's all crap.
Yeah, apparently they were. Because
yeah.
that's sort of what I'm hearing from yeah. just, you know, my short amount of research, and then also talking to the companies who were looking to hire. That's
the idea, you know, of the inflation of the house
is disappointing.
I think if you take the last 8 years and you look at the degradation of what's happened to regular people in terms of prices and everybody else, you would absolutely be pissed off enough to vote for a change, except for the part that the guy you're voting for was there the first 4 years, right? I mean, I've never seen anything like
right.
this.
It didn't happen.
It's insanity. It's like he wasn't
right.
there.
And it didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Biden was there for 8 years. He wasn't. I'm no fan of Biden.
True.
Everybody knows that. But, I mean, come on. At some point, you got to look at the numbers. And I just hope we're not, Dan, into this mess now where Trump's going to inherit this pretty bad economy, I think, worse than people are saying. And I think he has to be very good, and hopefully he can be. He's my president. Doing the best he can, put the right people in place, although I don't know about that, a couple of them, but a few of them I think are pretty darn good. And a change of tone, I don't really have much of an issue with that. But now, if he doesn't pull this quote off, now we're going to vote for somebody else 4 years because we need a change again? I mean, the thing that's assaulted my brain doing this show, you go back 20 years, 24 years, 18 years, pick the number. You see this degradation going along all the way. Why the people are having to have two jobs? It's because, you know, 15 years ago, their job paid X versus price of a car or a house, and now it doesn't. Well, there's been just as many Republican presidents as Democratic presidents all along the way. They didn't do anything to change. Not like they didn't do anything, but to change where we've been going for 25 years, nobody changed it. No one, not one of the presidents changed it. And Bush was probably the worst, and he was Republican, right? So, I mean, this idea that all of a sudden, I mean, stuff's not working, Dan. We know that. And businesses, like the guys that you go see and are good at finding and do well for your clients, you're finding the intelligent people that the America maybe that used to be. They're not getting to the top just because they go to the government, stick their nose up government's ass, and get a loan that nobody else can get. They're actually doing business the old-fashioned way. But the big guys aren't doing that, are they? They're I mean, how are we?
Not that I know of. I mean, they're.
I mean, I just want what I want to ask you because, you know, by the way, I value your opinion. About 6 months ago, I think I sent it to you. I sent it to everybody. Lou sent out, and I don't know where the hell he got it. I don't know if I could find it again. He sent out a thing about all the mergers and acquisitions that have been in the defense industry in the last 25 or 30 or 35 years. It's incredible of how many companies that maybe World War II, Vietnam or something, used to produce this, used to produce that. Boeing has to have picked up, what, 15 of them? I mean, it's incredible how few people there are to go. When we talk about getting on this, quote, war footing or starting to kick ourselves in the ass and replace some of the stuff we've used, man, can you go to Boeing now and try and get those guys to do something right? I mean, we've let that whole industry just congeal into five or six people. That's not healthy, is it? We've become what we detest.
No,
go ahead. I'm talking too much. Go ahead.
It's a combination of things that's happening, and you know, the viewpoints that I got last week and just, you know, what we've known for a while is automation has taken over a lot of the role of you know, the manufacturing workers, and the management of the organizations that have done well will continue to do well in any environment. So they're, you know, one of the companies I talked to last week is a steel, Olympic Steel, and they have a really solid management team, and they do business with a company that I had invested in, where I invested in the bonds many, many, many years ago. A Steel, is they did very well in any environment. So they were pretty cyclical.
Dan, we're hearing like every other word.
Oh, I know. There's a bad connection. I'm coming to you from. I'm actually on the road, and I'm in Fort Lauderdale, and I have a bad connection here. It's. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, a little bit. You want to check out Want to check out and check back in real quick? See if that helps.
I can try that, yes.
Why don't you do that? I'll have you back in 10 seconds, and Greg and I will talk for a second. We got NVIDIA is positive here after being down almost $5 last night, so it really is unchanged on the earnings, which is somewhat interesting.
Someone made a bunch of cash on shorting $12 straddles.
Yeah, boy, no kidding. After the Target one and after the Snowflake one, I don't know if I'd have the nerve to be selling these straddles. What do you think?
Maybe in the back.
Well, I mean, how many times has NVIDIA moved up like 20% on earnings?
My favorite one to track is MicroStrategy, MSTR.
Which is Bitcoin, basically, right?
Leverage Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And now, like Russell had talked about, was it iBit?
Yeah, what are those guys doing?
They got options on that now.
That's right.
So the Bitcoin Trust has options.
So we can't get the companies that are making something to go up, but we can take a fake stock and run it up, right?
I mean, you got to play the hand you're dealt.
That's exactly right.
So why not?
Oh, I sure wish that if I'd have been alive then, I'd have gotten in on the tulips early and got out the day before they crashed. But how do you know it's the day before they crash?
What's it called? The MSTR.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the at the money straddle from yesterday. I mean, it's up $67 today, so it's trading 540. But yesterday, I think the at the money straddle was.
These guys even make any money anymore? Do they have a real business, or they just own Bitcoin?
No. The at the money straddle was over $50. So,
Greg, what's your estimate? We hope we get Dan back in a second. What's your estimate coming at you from out of the blue here? What if somebody were to find like a bug in this Bitcoin and find out that there's something wrong, that people are actually stealing in there or somebody hacks in? How much value do you think is in? You ought to be able to find this. All the Bitcoins now, what's the value? It's got to be over $1 trillion. It's got to be way more than that.
If we look at total market cap for Bitcoin or total market cap for all the crypto?
The Bitcoin that started it all out. Probably the one that's the most vulnerable. Maybe not. I don't know.
They say it's what, over 1.8 trillion.
Yeah. We lose Dan totally?
I see.
Can you hear me now?
Hey, oh, yeah. That's better, okay. Bud. That's better. We're just talking about how many Bitcoins you own.
not.
The,
zero.
Yeah, we're
yeah, this is it's got a huge run-up. But there's nothing real there.
You know, what I'm finding, Dan, and I was, is everybody who thinks there's a solution in the world, whatever it is, whether you own Bitcoin, whether you own this, whether you own that, and you even mentioned it earlier, but some people think that Trump's going to like do this and make this happen. Does anybody ever talk to the guy? I mean, everybody is like, everybody I know is in the guy, every Republican I know is in the guy's brain, and every solution they have, he's magically going to do. Really? You know, if the tariffs are going to do this, the tariffs are going to do that. I hope a lot of it comes to pass. I really do. But, I mean, everybody I talk to that's a Trump supporter, well, he's going to do this. He's going to do that. Well, I actually have people that have told me that they were in terms of booting out the migrants, they want it to be as brutal as possible. Not when I say brutal, they want these people getting in a paddy wagon in the middle of the night and put them on a train car because they don't want anybody else ever coming here. There's people that feel that way. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy. I'm actually, you know, I would actually say here in Florida, you know, I get the local news and the local news headlines, and even this morning there's another one about the fact that there could be well over a million people deported from the state. We went through this a few years ago when DeSantis started doing that right in the middle of hurricane repair work, and most of us were quite upset with him because there weren't too many legal workers, if you will, or people who, you know, weren't immigrants, willing to get up on top of people's roofs in the middle of the hot sun and replace them. So we have there's definitely going to be the jobs that need to be filled, and it's going to have an inflationary impact, because in order to get people to do those jobs that have been done by the people who come in and are not yet legal citizens, we're going to have to pay more. Companies going to have, and that you can see firsthand in Florida, because there's
$1,000 a week isn't
a large percentage of foreign, you know, foreign immigrants, well over a million people that there's talk of deporting. The question becomes, and I've talked to a good friend who's an immigration lawyer about this, do they actually go and knock on people's doors? They are allowed to have a court hearing, and it just gets kind of messy. So what I've heard from people who are probably the most, you know, have the clearest ear, if you will, to what's going to happen, is that it's likely that the people who are here are not going to necessarily be deported unless they were criminals, and the people who are, you know, the effort and the money is not going to be spent on that, but just on vetting people coming in from this point on. So there's a lot of uncertainty. I did talk to, as I mentioned earlier, a woman who was driving I needed to get a rental car, and she was driving the shuttle van, and she made it perfectly clear, and she was a woman of Latin descent, and she said, I don't like when other, you know, people are getting their checks and going, when I go to the grocery store and they're arguing over how come I didn't get enough this week. And she says they look perfectly capable to be able to work. So there is some of that going on. You know, we don't see it. I don't see it day to day, but it's just, I think it's important to, it's an important change that has to take place on the labor front. And that change was exacerbated during COVID when people didn't have to work. People were given entitlements that were very healthy and other people weren't. And I think that trend needs to change. And a lot of the divisiveness that we've seen in this country is actually based on that. That's, you know, we hear a lot of the issues that have to do with more, you know, in the press that have to do with more social issues. But I think what it comes down to is for a lot of people who are just trying to get through their day, is the monetary issues, and they're, you know, trying to pay their bills, and the way they view this administration, And it's not even that they know that the new administration is going to provide what they need. It's just that the last one wasn't.
Well, I mean, whenever
I'm not necessarily agreeing. I'm just kind of providing.
I think you're absolutely
providing my observations that.
Well, I'm a I try and be.
Seems to make sense, and that there's.
I try and be somewhat of a behavioral economist, and when people are hurting, and I believe we had the guy yesterday who was saying that the article about the Trump is inheriting a turd of an economy, and he, I don't know where this guy came from, but he said in his mind people have been losing 2% a year for quite a while in terms of inflation versus income.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely correct. People are working two jobs. Matter of fact, Nancy once in a while talks about she gets people doing a mortgage where the family is actually working two and a half jobs, where they're both fully employed, and maybe one of the two, husband or wife, is a CPA, and they do tax returns in the first quarter of the year or something. So, I mean, yeah, but it's you can either say, you can look at where the money's going, and it's going to a certain amount of people, or you can have somebody who I think, Trump's in office. He has a skill set. His group, turned it to say the reason why you guys are having so much trouble is because these guys below you are getting something you're not, and not turning around and saying, you're never going to hear this administration say we gave $9 billion to Musk. Because $9 billion is a lot of money. You're never going to hear that. It's going to be, we gave money to these dirty Venezuelans, and that should have been your money. You're not going to say, oh, by the way, we gave this much money to Amazon or someplace, or we didn't charge taxes coming into Illinois for people who bought stuff out of state for 10 years on Amazon, and we gave it to, maybe Pritzker's wife who bought a TV. You're never going to hear that out of these people. You're going to hear, these people down here don't go to work, and we gave them $50 last week, which is... To me, it's amazingly hateful. I just don't like it, Dan. I mean, we can have all these people on the show that love the new administration. They can sever wherever they're not going to change my mind. I just don't like it. It's not America. It's not my America. Just saying. But I guess it is.
Yeah. No. And I absolutely agree with you.
I mean, my Hispanic friend in the building.
This is just a viewpoint that I've seen.
I mean, you're breaking up again, but one of my Hispanic friends in the building was talking about how many Hispanics in his area voted for Trump because somehow they felt that the new migrants were getting a quicker path to citizenship than they were. Is that even true? I mean, do these guys have that kind of a... The guys I see hanging around... Everybody says that, but does it really? Is it really? I mean, I don't see any of these guys getting their citizenship that are standing in front of the Home Depot.
I think it's been true during certain periods of time. There are programs, I've mentioned this before, in both California and in Florida, for people that are working in the fields that have come in, and the government will support them and provide, shelter and a work program and advancement and all that. Those programs have sort of been left to the wayside. They haven't been as, it costs money. Those programs cost money, and so yes, there are people that came in during from Haiti during a number of years ago when Obama was in office, and a lot of them came to South Florida, and there were programs that were in place to help those people. So from that point of view, but you're right, I mean, the people making these calls don't have all the information, they don't know the whole story, and some of it is rumor, and some of it is, some of it, there might maybe some of it that is factual, but there seems to be a fair amount of resentment on the point of people who are having to work two jobs to pay their way. And again, the only reason I'm mentioning this is just that this has been some recent observation that helps explain a little bit of maybe where some of the vote came from that wasn't necessarily televised or necessarily broadcast or provided to through the news networks.
Dan, you're mentioning it because you observed it, and it's absolutely true. That's why you mentioned it. It's true. It's exactly. I mean, you're right.
Yeah, it is true. It's.
You don't come on the show and lie. You never did.
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, hey. All right. So.
Yeah. To shift gears a little bit.
Where Well, yeah, you're breaking up again, but we're in this mess.
On another related note, what?
Well, I was going to say, in regards to, I was going to shift gears into maybe people buying or selling some stock here. The last couple of days, have you been kind of, what is it telling you about the appearing, essentially the dichotomy between the Walmart report and the Target report? I mean, does that mean that you, if you had people, you have people in some stocks that you want to say, hey, get the bleep out? And should we, where, if we're going to muddle along for a year and the lowest priced places seem to do well, I mean, do you have winners and losers here?
I think so, and some of it is going to also come. Well, we've had winners and losers in just the tech model too,
yeah.
Right? The seven stocks that have driven the market have been clearly been the winners over the last year plus, and a lot of the other names have. If some of them have traded up in sympathy, but not as nowhere nearly as much as those seven names. The Nvidias of the world that are, you know, that people have thrown all their money into those stocks, and you know, there's a huge bubble there right now. The other observation that I've made through this conference is just meeting with a number of the tech and biotech companies and just seeing how much turnover there's been since the last time that I may have met with these organizations. It may have been 6 months ago or a year ago. Now they have a whole new management team coming in, all new senior management. The company, you still like the company, you still like what they're doing. Their stock is still, it's doing okay. But now you have a whole new group of people running the organization.
Why?
So
why?
That change of control, turnover in biotech, a lot of people have cashed out at, you know, thinking we're at the top here. So they retired young or they retired sooner than expected. That story is fairly common. I've heard that, you know, in a number of places. I mean, we clearly heard that, you know, a lot of people have lost a dentist or a doctor who's retired young. But we've also lost a lot of tech and biotech managers, senior managers, who are now at the age of, you know, they may be baby boomers or approaching that age, that have a fair amount of money. And at this point, they've decided this is a good time to step back and retire. The problem becomes in replacing those people. So if you have to go to the outside, you're bringing in somebody that came from a very different corporate culture. And that itself can change the organization. The problem is that the vision that the leaders had who have retired is no longer there. So there's going to be some shakeup, I believe, in the next few years in the you know, the even in some of the bigger tech and biotech names, with the companies not being able to follow what the leaders who had started these organizations or really are responsible for the big surge up in these organizations in recent years. That is a concern, you know, that I have. I have less comfort, less, you know, I don't think the new people are as credible as the ones that have, you know, started the movement in their industry.
Dan, let's go to break. When we come back, I got a huge question for you in terms of these people, and you see them in a lot of not just the biotech, but in some of the, you know, a lot of the, you know, the big companies, even let's say the software companies, those kinds of places where you get this rise up in the stock. These people are rewarded well with stock. They essentially cash out, and they're like gone. And maybe someday the company doesn't even exist.
Yes.
And nobody ever got a dividend or anything. Let's talk about that model a little bit, because when I was in grad school, it's when everybody shifted to that model. They wanted people to have all this stock because they thought they were there for the long-term good of the company.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in some cases it's worked exactly the opposite. But I want your opinion on that. When you pay, SP Futures up 30, NASDAQ Futures up 108. We have Vinny of Papa North here. It's up 336. I knew that guy would come out no matter what the numbers told people, because it was down originally. He would come out and say something and drive it to the upside. But here we are. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 29, NASDAQ futures up 99. We were down a little last night, not anymore. Dow futures up 163. Let's see what we got going on. The American Express up $1.79. Stock's up huge since the election. Not sure why that is, but it is. Amazon up 158. We've got Caterpillar up to 3, up 3. Virtually, the only one down is McDonald's for some reason. They're down 391. That's the only, well, Cisco's down 6 cents. We don't care about Cisco. Everything else in the Dow is green. Over in Europe, I think they are up as well. Let's check. DAX up 86.5%. FTSE up 36.5%. CAC around down 7. Call that flat. Not sure what's going on over in France, but they're not participating. Asia, Nikkei was down 326. That's 0.8%. Hang Seng down 103.5%. Shanghai was up 2. Call that flat. So generally down a little in Asia. Yesterday, Dow was up 139. S&P up 13 cents. NASDAQ down 21. So a mixed inside day. Heading into the NVIDIA earnings, which originally showed down on the stock, now it's up $3. Bonds down 1 basis point, 4.39. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.31. Japan up 2 basis points, 1.09. Going from 0.8 to 1, like I said, 1.09. Greg can comment on it. It seems like not much, but for them it's a lot. In percentage terms, it's huge. Oil up $1.22, but back under 70. 69.97 was over 70 an hour ago. Up Brent up 117, 73.98. Natural gas up 17, 337. As we're starting to get colder in the country, so natural gas has gone from really below 2 a while ago to 337. So people are thinking it might be a little cooler this winter. RBOB 2 cents, 207. Gold up 14.40, 26.66. Pretty good rally there. Silver up 7 cents, 31.07. Copper down a penny, 4.13. Copper's been kind of stuck. The U.S. dollar, 105.3 against the euro. Again, it's been strong and it's not weakening, it doesn't appear. British pound, 126. And the Japanese yen, 154. Crypto, this is the move. It's 3,200 up, 97,635. Somehow or another, this is considered the Trump rally. I don't know if he's going to have the government. Everything, the government's going to start buying crypto. Boy, that'd be something. What do you got for us, Greg? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7:37 here in Chicago. It feels like 23. Winter weather advisory from 7 a.m. this morning to 1 p.m. Slippery road conditions, possible rain later. Phoenix, a lot nicer, 45 now, high of 80 today, mostly sunny. Low of 46 tonight for Phoenix. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 45 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 60 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 45 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 23 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 42 minutes. Sports, NBA Bulls lost at Bucks, 106-122. Knicks win at Suns, 138-122. And NFL tonight, Steelers at Browns, 7:15. That's all I got, guys. Back to you.
What do you... I was gonna ask you why the metals and oil. Boy, the oil seems sure quiet here. What's your opinion on that? Before we get to Dan,
there's been a decent amount of volatility, right?
Yeah. Well, all within the range, 67 to 74,
look,
back again.
Yeah. If you look at the past 2 weeks, they've taken out a lot of stops. So.
Okay. Dan, those markets. As the stuff in Ukraine, you know, appears to be ratcheting up, unfortunately, the metals and the gold has been up some, but it was down some, so it's right back kind of where it was. Oil's not showing any stress, really, is it? I mean, what am I missing?
No, I know. I think it was initially some movement in the dollar, which, you know, moving up, which is not always good for the commodities. But they don't seem to be, the commodities don't seem to be following their traditional pattern, you know, in moving in lockstep with economic growth, or in lockstep with, you know, an opposite movement with inflation. So there's you know, we're when people talk about inflation right now, inflation has come down, prices are still high. So I think, you know, just from the point of view of investing in those areas, there's some you know, there's some confusion. I would say that I still think gold and silver are a good long-term play here. They're not at the highest levels ever. Historically, they have moved up. In terms of oil, we're going to have that other geopolitical risk that will continue to be, you know, that'll weigh heavy on whether that oil's a good investment going forward. And I would say stay on the sidelines there.
Do you think, you know, despite...
When we're talking about bonds, you
know... I was going to say, do you think we were talking about, you know, some of the rhetoric from the campaign. Well, you know, if you talk to some people, you know, Biden killed oil. Well, the fact is, we're drilling record amounts. So do you think
already? Yeah.
Do you think as a country that we are drilling enough to where we're not as anywhere near as susceptible to Saudis screwing around or anybody? I don't know if we're there yet, but I think we're getting kind of close to where we're almost to the point where, yeah, would it go up some if those guys, you know, pitched a bitch of some kind? Yeah, but it's, I don't know that we're as susceptible to that kind of. The reason why the oil prices are stable, I think, is because we're producing more. I mean, am I wrong there?
You know, I think you're absolutely right, and I think the irony is that it came during Biden's administration, not Trump's.
Well,
you know, that there was a concern that there would be moving away, but it's been a I think it's been a good move in the sense of, if you look at it from the point of view of defense, right? If you look at it from the point of view of military defense and all that, it's actually protecting us.
Well, to be fair, the oil production was going up pretty rapidly when Trump was in office to almost like 13 million barrels a day. You know, it's kind of weird. My shout out at Humanity, which I don't normally want to do. It's stunning to me how many people argue with me on the oil production levels because of what they hear. And I say, have you ever looked at the table? And the answer is inevitably no. It's right there. It's the easiest thing to look up is Google U.S. oil production. It's by month going back like 60 years. But to be fair, Trump, it was up over 13 million barrels a day when COVID hit. And then, of course, it just went rocketing down, which was not Trump's fault. It was down to like, I mean, maybe 11 or something, maybe even less than that. And then when Biden came in and the COVID thing, you know, went away or went down in terms of stress, it's pretty much come right back on the same glide path it was under the Trump administration, and has now reached 13.6 or 13.7 or something. So it was growing under Trump, and now it went way down, and then it started growing again, and it's basically on the same glide path. So I would not say that. I would say Biden didn't hamper it, as everybody seems to think he did, but it was
right.
Going up on
it. Right.
So if you look at the 8 years, it looks like it was going up. We had the COVID problem, and now it's going up again. So those are what the numbers tell you. I mean, you can dive into who's at fault and who did what and where, but the fact is, the numbers, that's basically what they show, right?
It's still, you know, it's still a necessary industry. It's still a necessary, you know, there's a lot of talk about the movement towards, and we've talked about this many times before, the movement towards alternative energy, but, you know, moving to electricity. My neighbor was putting in a charger station in their garage so they could charge their new EV, and it was a major process. You know, it was a process that took about 4 days. And the benefit, you know, you have to look at the cost benefit. I drive a hybrid now, which I think is the best of both worlds. But there's, you know, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, and I wonder if the neighbor understands that electricity is still sourced by natural gas. It's not all coming from solar and wind. So there's a sometimes I think there's a misconception of how.
Dan, let's not throw any ice over tonight.
People switching over to electricity. Exactly, and it's you know, this is just, we're just in a transition phase. So this is one area that I do think we have handled well, and there's, you know, bipartisan interest for the most part. There has been. It's just a, you know, it's just what has to happen right now, and it seems to be working okay. And it hasn't been in the spotlight. But does that mean that we should be investing in those energy companies? I'm not sure, because there's still a lot of confusion going forward. So we're always looking ahead to see whether they make investments, and would those energy companies be able to shift towards alternative sources? I'm not sure, but I also know that the cost of those alternative sources has been prohibitive in many cases, and it's really made this transition, or slow down this transition.
Well, it's stunning.
Well, I was going to shift gears on.
Go ahead. What do you?
I'm just going to shift gears into bonds and talk about what, you know.
Yeah, let's do that. Just a quick question. Why was it take so long to put that thing in there? Did they not have 220 in the house or what?
Yeah, no, you have to. This is the they didn't have 220 in the house. There's it all has to come from outside. There has to be a day or at least half a day where you don't have, you know, your power shut off. And it was an older house that just needed, you know, they needed everything to be upgraded on the electric panel. So it was more of a process than I had at this base, because I hadn't actually watched the process in person. I know people who have done that, but I haven't seen somebody
I can't believe somebody in Florida didn't have central. Can't believe somebody in Florida didn't have central air. You need 220 for central air.
Yep, that's. All changing. I mean, and then for solar, there's also, you know, the station that you need for, you know, the construction of putting your house into solar is pretty, you know, onerous as well. It isn't just simply putting a few panels on your roof. It is a lot more to the process.
I'm gonna jump into your topic here, but you got to be careful with that, because
yes,
Nancy was on Mondays, every other Monday, which was on this week, but she's had some mortgages, and Audrey sold a couple of houses where they've had the solar panels on the roof. That's like a 20-year liability. They'll put it up. They say they'll put them on for free, and you owe them like $100 a month or something. I mean, she just closed the house where I think the person had to come up with $21,000 to buy those people out, because the new owner said, I don't want solar.
You
gotta be real careful.
The ones who try to rent it, the rental ones who rent actually have had a lot of trouble. In fact, some of those companies have actually gone bankrupt or haven't done well. They weren't really planning for those obstacles, just as some of the even here in Florida, some of the charging stations. It's shifting gears a little. Charging stations in people's homes for the EVs have caused, fires and electrical hazards. So it's not an exact science. It's something that's going to take time to work itself out. It may not even be the best solution, or maybe we haven't found the best solution to it, but it's a work in progress. So those people who were really skeptical at first and said, let's go all solar, let's go all, you know, anything that has to do with fossil fuels, let's say no, you know, really weren't very realistic. And now I think that's happening, and people have become more realistic because it's impacting them. It's impacting the daily user, that person that wants to ship. And like I said, a lot of those companies have gone bankrupt that are doing that, and the workers and the liability and the weight of the panels on your roof and all that. It's we don't have the solution yet, or it hasn't been perfected yet.
Well, Dan, we've been still sneaking. We've still been sneaking on your advice. A lot of our people that have, you know, we're not at the point here. We have, you know, a lot of people, million and a half dollar accounts. We've got a lot smaller too, but you know, I don't think everybody has to be all in right here. So we have a lot of people that have million and a half dollar account. They're in the market, say 2/3, depending on the individual, depending on their age. So you don't ever take investment advice from anybody on radio and TV unless they know your stuff. Which, of course, none of the people on TV do. But depending on the person, we've got you know, 25, 30, 40, 50% cash, whoever the peoples are, you know. And same thing you do. Everybody's different, just like my commercial says. But we're still doing the three-month T-bill. Is that how would you
do it? Yeah, I was going to mention, in terms of the bond side, the T-bill right now that is giving you the highest yield is what I would call the 1.5 month. It's the one that matures on December 31st, or maybe the New Year's Eve T-bill. That's getting 4.65. You can get 4.65. That means you buy it off the run. You're not buying it on the run.
Right.
I would say between 1 and 2 months, it's given the best yield. Up to 3 months, you're okay. Once you get past that, you're already seeing somewhat of a sell-off. You know, I mean, the yields will start dropping pretty quickly down to 4.50, 4.40. We will see another, most likely, another 25 basis point cut coming on December 18th. But our belief is that at that point, the Fed is going to hold. We're not going to see a whole lot more after that until we see what happens with the new administration. So this particular meeting, very likely to see the Fed continue to do what they're doing, because price levels are high, because the maximum employment may be there by statistics, but I still think that they want to make sure that they've done enough cutting. So we're going to most likely see another 25 basis points. What that means for bondholders across the board is generally good news, especially short-term bonds, because as I mentioned before, when short-term bond rates are cut, if you own a short-term bond, the price of your bond or your T-bill is going to go up. So you have that double benefit of getting the yield, plus you're going to have the pop-up in the price. That is, if you trade them the way that we do. But even if you don't, getting 4.65 is still not bad for a risk-free rate. Now, corporate bonds are a different story. The spreads have tightened significantly to record levels. And what that means is that the yield pickup, what you're getting, the yield you're getting over the comparable treasury of the same maturity has come down. However, the default rate has come down significantly. We're not seeing the amount of defaults. And with corporate bonds and high yield bonds in particular, the biggest risk is default risk. There are a lot of companies out there that may not come across as being the best credits, but we're getting 6, 6.5, 7% on some 1 year bonds, or even less than 1 year, name like Xerox, which has bonds that mature in August, Seagate Technology, Pemex, which is the Mexican cement company, Petrobras, which is an energy company based in Mexico. And then United Airlines and American Airlines both have bonds. If you have to stay in the short term, that would be less than a year, but you can get 6, 6.5, even 7%. And I would refer to these bonds as money good. In other words, the companies currently have the cash to pay off these bonds. And that's a pretty big pickup over what you'd get in a T-bill. So those are some corporate bond ideas. Municipal bonds are okay. They're not liquid. When you buy them, you may need to hold them to maturity. Do not buy the long-term bonds, because you're going to have this. We have interest rate risk on the long run. We're likely to see higher rates in the long run. So I would stick with shorter-term municipals, 5 years and under. Bonds that are AA rated or single A rated or better. And you're looking for that after-tax yield. So they work well in states like Illinois, California, New York. We have high state tax as well, and you're still getting a decent yield. So that's where I'd say bonds come out. The trend, I think, will continue to be positive with rates on the short end going lower, but stay away from long-term bonds, because those rates are likely to continue to go higher, and the value of your bond will drop when that happens.
Dan, we're coming out of an administration that, you know, partially because of the COVID, I guess, but was very generous, shall we say, to state and local governments and federal largesse, you know, which, so when you, if you would do like what Milton Friedman will always try to look at the total picture, which is hard to do now because you got so many foreign investors in the U.S., but you actually could probably make the argument, somewhat of an argument, that the federal deficit, as bad as it looks, isn't that bad, because they shipped a lot of that money to state and locals, and if you didn't just plain piss it away, a lot of them are in a lot better shape than they were 4 years ago. I think that's, I mean, it's hard to, it's hard to quantify. I'm not going to say they're equaling out at all, because I think some states and cities like
Chicago. That trend can continue too.
But I think the what I'm saying, I think Chicago put some of it to good use and pissed a lot of it away, to be perfectly blunt. But state of Illinois, I think Pritzker actually used it. A lot of people don't like him, but economically he's pretty sound, and I think he did a lot of. The state is way better off than it was before this. Now, is it a quid pro quo? I don't think so. I mean, I think but now it appears that tone is going to change with the new administration. That states and cities, especially.
Yeah, and that'll be, absolutely. And I think that's something I've thought about as well. And that should be an interesting to see as some of the municipalities take on more of the responsibility, if you will, take on more of the debt, how that's going to impact municipal bonds. I think the bonds that are currently outstanding probably going to be okay, unless they're general obligation bonds. But that path, I think that's going to take a little bit more time to happen. I think there are certain issues that the new administration will handle up front, which may not impact municipalities directly. But there will be, over time, there are definitely.
Well, we're already talking
some
about
issues where some of the.
We're already talking about City of Chicago having issues with their bond rating, which doesn't surprise me. But I guess what I'm saying is would there be a Dan Janitas comment where you say, just based on generally, everybody should look, if it's double A, you maybe should think it's, A and a half or something. Are you thinking there should
still
be
still A already? Yeah.
Are you thinking that maybe every state and municipality is now slightly overrated, given what it was versus what it's going to be?
Yeah, I would say if it's general obligation bond, probably the case, because the taxing power then goes down to the municipality, and the municipality is the one that's going to have to raise taxes to take care of a lot of the. Or some of the things that the federal government had been taking care of. So yes, when it comes to a specific project, because a lot of municipal bonds are project bonds that relate to the credit rating of the company or the whoever is running that project or managing that project or benefiting from that project, in that case probably to a lesser degree. So yes, I would say if you're buying the general obligation of a state or of a city, and you're looking at the credit rating, the chances are the credit rating is not going to be improving anytime soon.
Well, Dan, you mentioned
that. I would definitely agree with you on. However, if you're buying a hockey rink or a financing, maybe an airport, that will have the backing of corporations as well, and it may not have the same impact. It will not be as negatively impacted as the actual city or municipality.
Dan, you say that
itself.
You say that a lot. You've said it today a few times. I seem to recall, and again, I'm asking you, the idea that if you're the Metropolitan Sanitary District bond or something, rather than a general obligation bond, that if Chicago essentially goes under, you're fine. That didn't work out that way in Detroit, though, did it? They didn't. Just say, okay, all the sewer bonds and all the other stuff, they have their own revenue stream. They all didn't come out smelling like a rose. They all had a pony up for the general obligation, didn't they? I don't think they were all paid.
Yeah, most of the time what happens is that it's a specific administration or series of administrations that during their period of time they're that they've done everything, including raising the taxes, and there's a lot of pushback. The revenues that come in, the tax revenues that come in for a general obligation bond are the ones that pay for the services of that community. If they are, the streets, the police, those are the municipalities. So yes, there have been over time, but not a lot. But there have been some. Years ago, it was Philadelphia. Orange County was an unusual situation because it was a treasurer that had invested in some distressed debt, which wasn't appropriate at the time.
It was appropriate. So there appropriate when situations. he was making a fortune at it. It was appropriate, right?
Yeah, I mean those situations are unusual. But if you look at the percentage, Chief, if you look at the percentage of municipal debt that is actually defaulted, and that includes general obligation debt, the bonds we're talking about, much lower than the percentage of corporate debt.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So the recovery rate tends to be much higher than it does on corporate bonds in general. And then if you look even more specifically at the way that some of the revenue bonds, not general obligation, but revenue bonds that derive their revenue from a particular project, those in this environment, I think, will perform better. They don't have as much, the income flow, the cash flow that's paying for them is not directly related to the taxes of that municipality. So a weak economic environment in the city is not going to be favorable when you're looking at paying, general obligation of that city or that state.
All I'm saying is if what you've said is absolutely true. I mean, which you're not supposed to say on radio. What you've said is absolutely true, but I'm saying just a little bit of a warning that if you think, and I don't think this, if you think Chicago is going to go totally under and declare bankruptcy in a year from now, don't think you can buy the reclamation district bonds and you're on an island where you're fine, is all I'm saying. Be careful with that because it's got to go to
It's
got to go to a bankruptcy court and all kinds of
crap.
It's
a long workout process.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a very long multiple year workout process, and it doesn't guarantee anything. It's and you also have to do your homework, like you would with any stock or any corporate bond.
So Dan, you heard the weather report here. That means you're not coming to Chicago till spring or what?
I'll be there. I'll get there at some point.
All right, bud. What do you make of today's stuff? I mean, Nvidia turns out everything's okay. Your buddy Jim Cramer the other day, the stock was down like $2, and he was talking about buy the dip. Is there no place too high for these stocks? Maybe not.
I think that's a momentum play. I think it's a momentum play still. I think it's also kind of like the same with crypto. There's a belief in the future. You know, it's the way it was with the EV. There's a desire that there's people want these stocks to do well, so that's why there's the momentum. I don't believe it's based necessarily on fundamentals.
Dan, take care of yourself. Have a nice weekend. You're not going skiing down in Florida, but we'll talk to you.
Maybe to the beach.
Wait, we're trying to get you on another day next week because Thursday's Thanksgiving. We'll spread it around. We don't want to miss
Friday
our
Friday works for me.
Okay, we'll do Friday.
Friday next week works for me.
All right, thank you. S&P Futures up 26. As if he's up 109, back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Have a good one.
That's all, folks.